is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Join me, shall you, as we go into the Plymouth Superior Courtroom for another day of the Lindsay Clancy trial. Let's get you up to speed on where things are at, and I certainly welcome your thoughts in the comment section below. Be sure to press subscribe, by the way, wherever you're listening. And if you want to get the courtroom audio every day and take it with you as you go throughout your day, then subscribe to the podcast. The link is right down there if you're watching us on YouTube. It's a QR code. It takes you right there to our link tree, so then you can select where you want to listen. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever. The links are all there for you, as well as YouTube, but you're probably already there. It's more so for taking it with you as you go. So do check that out. Or just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi wherever you get podcasts. Okay. The doctor the Plymouth County District Attorney hired to examine Lindsay Clancy told the jury what she told him she said as she tightened an exercise band around each one of the children. The words, the phrasing as to what came out of her mouth as this action was taking place. Go to God. He said it proves she knew her kids were innocent and knew what she was doing to them was wrong. It's a lot of conjecture out of a statement given by a woman in a state of psychosis, as every doctor has already said. But you, Plymouth County District Attorney, you know better. Your conjecture on this, I'm sure, supersedes medicine and psychology and all that. That same morning in the same courtroom, the defense's doctor told the same jury those words are the illness talking. You know, professionals, once you've actually done this for a living. You know? Yeah. One sentence, two experts, and the verdict now lives inside of it. After 18 days of testimony, the state doesn't have much else to decide it with. Dr. Arvin Mack is a forensic psychiatrist. The DA's office retained him to evaluate Clancy's claim of postpartum psychosis. And he sat down with her at Tewksbury State Hospital on April 10th and 12th of 2026. That is 3 years and 3 months after the killings. And 3 years into her treatment at a state hospital. Okay. He was the first witness prosecutors called once the defense rested. And according to Matt, Clancy told him she heard a voice the moment her husband left the house for CVS and a restaurant. A male voice laughing, telling her she should kill the kids because this was her last chance to kill herself. She said she took Dawson to the basement first, wrapped the band, and said, "Go to God." And then did the same with Cora and Callan. Mac's reading is simple. Calling the children to God treats them as innocents, and killing innocents is wrong. So if she said it, she understood the difference. He added that hospital records he reviewed show she was horrified when she woke up after the fall, and he reads that the same way. Dr. Philip Resnick read it the other way. He's the forensic psychiatrist who testified for the defense in the Andrea Yates case, and he's told the jury he's worked about 80 cases where a parent is accused of doing this to their child. He examined Clancy in May of 2023, 4 months after the deaths, not 3 years, at Kevin Reddington's request. He testified by Zoom because recent surgery kept him from flying to Massachusetts. His chain runs like this. Clancy was obsessive about caring for her children. She heard a command. She felt her body taken over by something outside her in a dream state, almost like a puppet. In her distorted mind, she believed sending the kids to heaven with her was a favor because they'd be worse off on earth without her. He called it altruistic filicide, which means a killing done out of love rather than anger. In his words, she did what she believed was morally right. Now, Many will, that's the thing. Nothing is going to change anyone's opinion on this case. And it really is, this is a case that comes down to, I think, really one thing. One's acceptance of what is real and what is not in the world of mental health. And that it really is. That's really where this sits. Either you believe that people are capable of falling into states like this, and this is because I don't see, I can't give you a better case of where it's more well documented the way a person fell into this and the causation leading up to that. With all the drug mixtures, the existing condition, everything there. I mean, this is just like textbook. Okay, here's how someone can fall into a state of psychosis. So either you believe a person is capable of getting there, and I'll tell you what, medicine, modern science, all say it's a thing. Or you don't, and you basically are rejecting psychology, modern science, and everything that tells us, okay, do this to a brain, and psychosis is a very likely outcome. Oh, look, this was the outcome here. Yes, utterly horrific, without a doubt. But I get some people are very much on this rail of she knew what she was doing and she's going to pay for it. I don't think you quite understand what she knew what she was doing means. One plus one can still equal two in a psychotic state. You can still function in a state of psychosis. It's the end means. It's the reason. It's the direction to which you are heading that makes zero sense to anyone other than the person in psychosis. She could be ordering dinner. She could be doing dishes. She could be doing all sorts of shit in between killing the children. And if in her brain, the best thing for them at that moment in time is to go to God, then she's doing the right thing. Because she's not thinking objectively. She's not thinking with a clear mind, a clear brain. And when you see the track record of this woman having various bouts of postpartum depression, various bouts of intrusive thoughts leading up to this, telling people when she could still catch it, when her thinking brain was still functioning with the psychosis part of the brain. She was saying, I don't like this. This is not right. My brain's not working right. Begging for help. She said, the storm is coming. The storm came. And everyone said, you brought that storm on yourself. To die, witch. Did she bring it on herself? I don't know. The evidence pretty much all points to the opposite of that. But there's a large group, and I'm not saying you're horrible people, but there's a large group still that just, I guess the mental end of things just doesn't matter. For whatever reason, everybody seems to have their backstory as to why that doesn't matter. Or the argument I hear sometimes is, no, I believe people can be in psychosis. I just don't believe she was. Well, I'd love to know who you believe was ever. And give me the evidence as to how they got there. And I've yet to hear a good argument. I don't know. I mean, tell me in the comment section. Someone, if you believe that Lindsay Clancy was not in a state of psychosis, yet you do accept that as being a condition someone can fall into, give me an example of a real life scenario where you believe it. Maybe it's Andrea Yates. I don't know. This case seems to have more shit with it too. I mean, they're both different, but I don't know how you could really believe one and not the other. I haven't really encountered anyone that does that. I'm not, again, this is the back and forth. This is good. It's good to try and understand each other's perspectives on this, because that's where I'm looking at this from. And you can tell me I'm wrong, but we can do it, you know. I fail to see the other side very clearly. Or maybe I do, and it's just, it is what it is. Just exactly what I said. Either you believe it, this mental health end of things, or you don't. Plenty of folks who aren't on the same page with a lot of mental health in this country, in the United States, that just believe it to be, you know, something else. That's why there's stigmas and things like that, which make, you know, getting help, admitting there's a problem, all that shit, even more difficult because of that stigma. Anyway, let me pull it back. The judge told jurors that some of what Resnick relayed from Clancy couldn't be taken as proof it happened, only as the basis for his opinion. So go to God as either a mother who knew exactly what she was doing, or a mother whose brain had rewritten what right means. Both doctors heard the same sentence. The rest of the day explains why the courtroom can't settle for it, or settle it for them. Mac's diagnosis for the fall of 2022 into January 23 is a major depressive episode, likely part of a major depressive disorder, and possibly generalized anxiety on top. He called it severe mental illness. He said she told him she's miserable and doesn't want to be alive, and that she teared up during the interview. He also testified she's being treated for bipolar disorder at Tewksbury, even though he found no evidence of mania or hypomania, and says she doubts that diagnosis herself. Two defense doctors came to a very different answer. Dr. Paul Zeisel, who's met with Clancy roughly 60 times since February 23, diagnosed bipolar disorder with postpartum psychosis. Resnick did too. The defense doesn't have to prove either one. In Massachusetts, once a defendant raises lack of criminal responsibility, the Commonwealth has to prove she was responsible beyond a reasonable doubt. That burden has two doctors. The state can prove she had no mental disease or defect at all. The state can prove she had no mental disease or defect at all. That's what they're trying to do. Or it can prove that, disease or not, she kept the ability to understand her conduct was wrong or to control it. So the goalposts keep moving here. It's like, well, she's got something going on. But how bad is bad enough? Well, however, it doesn't reach our end zone. However, we keep it over here. It's bad, but it's not quite there yet. Well, earlier you were saying she's a conniving bitch. So, where are we? She's either really mentally ill, just not quite mentally ill enough, or she's this manipulative, you know, mean girl that was basically trotted out in the opening arguments of the prosecution. What is it? Oh, we're going to change our story a little bit. That's kind of seems what's happening here right now. Got to back that up a little bit, because that description that was laid out at the opening arguments doesn't really hold up now that people have had a chance to view the lady and the evidence. Matt closed the first door himself when he called her illness severe. Everything the state has left runs through that second door. Matt kept plenty for the prosecution. He found no psychosis in the months leading up to the killings, and he said her symptoms started outside the window where postpartum psychosis usually appears. He called the killings methodical, organized, and aimed at a goal. His bottom line, she retained the capacity required for having criminal responsibility. That's the paid expert of the state. Then he said the sentence that should worry the people who hired him. He said it to blunt the defense so that even a jury that believes she was psychotic could still convict. There's no reason that psychosis in and of itself inhibits a person's inability to know right from wrong. See? Like I just said, 1 + 1 still can equal 2 to a psychotic person. So can right from wrong. It's what, where the compass thinks true north is. Your compass can still say you're going north, east, south, and west, even if you're going in the completely wrong direction, because the magnetic pole is coming from a different place. Does it mean those letters have erased themselves off of the compass? They're still there. It just thinks it's going in the right direction when it's not. I like that one. I'm going to use that as we discuss this. This morning, we have an interview with Jennifer Coffendaffer, and as you know, she has a very differing opinion on this than I do, and that is fine. And I'm going to use that example. I think it helps, not that I'm expecting to change her opinion, but I think it helps other people understand sometimes an analogy like that, where one is coming from. True north. If you got a magnet or something, or your compass is off because it's being pulled by a... Does anybody even know what a compass is anymore? I should ask that question first, considering we all use these, like compass, like, what is a compass? That's a good question. It's like asking a child what a rotary phone is. Hopefully they know what a compass is. You guys, I'm sure, know what a compass is. But that's really what it is. North, east, south, and west are not gone when your compass is being pulled magnetically somewhere else. And if you're the one interpreting that, I'd be the conscious part of Lindsay, you think you're going in the right direction. And then that hold, whatever is pulling that compass out, whatever that magnetic pull is, goes away. Suddenly goes back to north. And you're like, how the fuck have I been going southeast for the last 5 hours? Oh my God. That's what happened. For 18 days, the prosecution's case has landed on one word, psychosis. Her psychiatrist testified she saw no sign of it in a video session the day before the killings, and another provider said the same. The phone, the snowman photos, and the errand run were all offered as proof that she wasn't psychotic. If psychosis doesn't decide whether a person knew right from wrong, the absence of psychosis doesn't decide it either. The state's own expert told the jury the thing it spent a month proving isn't the test. The test is capacity. The first witness to argue capacity head on was Mac on day 18. And his proof was the sentence she said in the basement. That's why three words carry the weight they do. The state needs go to God to be a confession. The defense says it is the delusion itself. There's no third doctor to break the tie, and the judge will instruct the jury that mental illness isn't the end of the inquiry. If the Commonwealth hasn't proven she could appreciate wrongfulness or control herself, she isn't responsible. The defense has one more piece at this. Both doctors relayed the same timing from her. The voice arrived as Patrick walked out the door. Reddington's reading is that the errand, which prosecutors have used as evidence of planning, came before the illness took over. The prosecution's answer is that the voice is her account, and its planning evidence is what she allegedly did before he left, including checking how long the trip would take. Mac never testified the voice was a real hallucination. His diagnosis leaves it unexplained. The prosecution gets its own confessions out of Resnick on cross. He called Clancy a more sophisticated patient than most, forthcoming about nearly every symptom she had. The one she held back, he admitted, was the impulse to harm her children. She never told the providers who asked, which he called common, because mothers fear losing their kids. Well, they should! Yeah, maybe they should, but here's the motivation and here's how people act in real life settings. Prosecutor Jennifer Sprague asked whether that made it better to kill them than to lose them. The judge struck the questions. Reddington went back after Mac the way he'd gone after every state witness. He read the doctor's resume to the jury, child and adolescent psychiatry, addiction, nothing about pregnant women. Mac also told Reddington that prosecutors retained him in early 25, and he didn't sit down with Clancy until April of 26, when Mac said Clancy had a longstanding resistance to taking medication. Reddy can ask, are you making that up? Did she didn't tell you that. Max said she'd worried about medication reaching her breast milk. Reddington answered with a list of psychiatric drugs she took in the months before the deaths. The day ended with the two of them arguing about whether postpartum psychosis belongs in the DSM, the manual psychiatrists use to define mental disorders. Mac returns to the stand to finish the cross. Two more prosecution doctors, Kirk Helleburn and Gregory Sadoff, are expected after him. Then closings. Clancy has pled not guilty to the three counts of first-degree murder. If convicted, she faces life without parole. If the jury finds she wasn't criminally responsible, she goes to a state psychiatric hospital. On the first day of this trial, the prosecutor told the jury this case was not a public debate about women's mental health. It will end with three hired experts on the state side, two examining doctors on the defenses, and a sentence spoken in a basement that each of them heard differently about women's mental health. 12, 18 people will have to decide what she meant. It's not about mental health. Let me now present a case to you all about mental health because I didn't do my homework. I don't know. I still look back on that part of the case and go, it's a really weird statement to make. This is not a referendum on women's mental health. Really? Because that's really pretty much the entire case. I mean, pick things to downplay, but like the subject, that's a hard one to hide. It's hard to be like, oh, I misstated that. Yeah. Kind of the main topic. Maybe the bow's too tight up there in the hair. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. I got to say this, and you tell me, no matter from everybody who's got their opinions on this case, whether you think she's criminally responsible or not, I haven't found a whole lot of people who find the district attorney, the prosecutor here, to be all that likable in any way, whether you are in agreement with her and her arguments or not. She's not making the best case, and she's certainly not coming across as authentic, I guess would be my take on it. And insincerity, that really irks me. Anyway, your thoughts in the comment section, Substack and YouTube. Take the podcast with you down here. There's the QR code, or just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, where we get podcasts. We bring you the trial audio every single day so you can listen and binge away and enjoy staying up to date on what's going on. And of course, our commentary. It's all there for you. Check it out on the podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. The link is right there. Okay. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.